Science can't explain everything. Just because you can't see me doesn't mean I'm not here.
Thank you for joining me, everyone, and welcome to Paranormal Encounters podcast series. My name is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. I am the host and the producer of this show. Sit back, grab yourself some popcorn, and let's get started.
Be careful what you whisper.
Good evening, everyone. Yes, indeed. Let's get started here. This is going to be another full show this evening. Please welcome to the show tonight my special guest, Jeremy Scott.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
Care to join me in a little bit of abnormal this evening? My guest this evening is Jeremy Scott. Jeremy Scott is a radio professional who has been in the field for more than 20 years. His guests investigate everything between the abnormal and the paranormal. His show, Into the Para-Abnormal, is a live radio program syndicated by USA Audio Network, heard on terrestrial stations nationwide every Sunday through Thursday. His podcasts are streamed on digital networks and streaming apps. The Into the Para-Abnormal live radio program entertains a variety of topics, fringe topics that are somewhere between the abnormal and the paranormal. Jeremy dives deep into these subjects with his guests that are often very much ahead of their times and or censored or even banned from the mainstream. Jeremy's Into the Paranormal live radio program is ranked number one and third most popular streaming show on TalkStream Live's Paranormal Radio app for 2022. His show has also been ranked 19th most listened to talk show in 2021 and 2022 on the Power 50 list. He has talked to many, many guests about their interpretations and perceptions regarding their experiences, not only paranormal, but anything abnormal. And we have a lot to talk about this evening. So please welcome to the show this evening my guest, Jeremy Scott. Well, hello, Jeremy, and thank you so much for being on the show today.
Hi, Doctor. It's good to talk with you. Good to see you virtually.
Yeah, just recently, Jeremy and I were at the Oregon Ghost Conference that was in Seaside, Oregon, and Jeremy had the liberty of interviewing me on his show. And
I think it was a privilege.
The privilege. Yes, I will always never live that down. But thank you, Jeremy. But actually, him and I, we got along pretty well. I could have seen that interview go on forever, but tonight we are interviewing him and we're putting him in the hot seat and we have a lot to talk about. So here we go. So Jeremy, one of the things that they know of you by this time from your introduction is that you're a professional radio individual and you do a lot of interviewing with a lot of people on different subject matters, especially when it involves the para-abnormal or the paranormal or whatnot. And I thought it would be good if we started out tonight with just asking a basic question about maybe some of the experiences that some of your guests have relayed on the show. And we could probably start by talking about that and then maybe move that into some different subject matters on this program.
Sure. I mean, our show Parabnormal allows us to cover subjects that are far beyond paranormal. In fact, I just got a message recently from somebody who was arguing semantics, believing that, you know, the paranormal and the abnormal are really the same thing. And what we're talking about, I mean, yes, it's a play on words, but we're talking about the gray areas. For instance, not everything is paranormal. When we hear noises and when we see orbs and or when we capture apparitions, not all of that is paranormal. But is it abnormal? Yes, far more things are abnormal, in my opinion, than are deemed paranormal. Because once you start throwing the paranormal label out there, well, then it needs to be studied. It needs to be peer reviewed. And not necessarily everything that we talk about can reach that level. These aren't always things that you can reach out and grab. You certainly can't always see them. You can't smell them. You can't taste them. But we know they're there, so that puts it in kind of a gray area. So on into the paranormal, we talk about anything that would fall between the abnormal and the paranormal, which is pretty much everything but politics.
Interesting.
I'm one of the few shows that will bring politics into the genre. Now, there are strictly paranormal shows who will just talk about psychics and ghosts. There are just UFOs shows who will just talk about UFOs. There are shows out there who will get into what they call parapolitical, which is to try to find something paranormal or supernatural that has to do with politics. Kind of a stretch, if you ask me. And I'm kind of over here in my own section of the world, talking about those paranormal subjects that don't involve who's in office, that don't involve labeling anybody the Antichrist or anything like that, that really just get people wondering. I mean, many times we get to the end of the show and we don't have a conclusion. It's like to be continued. Because we've spent, you know, an hour and a half, 2 hours talking about this, and that's just opened up a can of worms. It's opened up additional questions, which we, you know, wouldn't have time to answer in that episode. But then we get to come back the next night, and we get to do it again. We get to come back the next week, and we get to do it again. And I'm very, very lucky to have been doing this for 8 years and to get invited to go all across the country to talk about this in front of people. So we cover everything. We cover ghosts. We cover UFOs, we cover Bigfoot, we cover anything weird and wacky, space debris, black holes, anything that you could possibly imagine that falls under that umbrella. We do get into the conspiracy theories. We talk about geoengineering. We talk about COVID conspiracies, the whole nine yards.
Wow. Yeah. And for somebody who does a lot of interviewing, you certainly gain along the way a lot of knowledge. You just hit on a subject that I haven't really talked about on this show at all, and I want to see what you have to, or what you recall, or what you know about it, and that is simply black holes, because I'm fascinated with these black holes that we see out there in the universe, and of course, many people are, there's one right there, and many people are led to believe that we're being, sucked into one, or we're going towards one, or whatever. What are your thoughts, and what kinds of things have you gained for your knowledge about black holes?
That's an interesting one. I haven't spent a lot of time talking about those. I do have that picture behind me. That was the M87, which was the first picture that was taken of a black hole. Which is the significance of that. But recently there's been talk that there's been these supermassive black holes that have basically merged. So we're talking about merging black holes, lighting up the cores of two merging galaxies. The thing about black holes is they're still very much unknown. There's a lot that we don't know about them. I wouldn't be the person to venture a thought on, you know, what these are. I definitely do find it fascinating, especially when we can capture the picture of one, but I'm not really sure how to explain them.
Yeah, and one of the things too regarding them, which I would be absolutely really nervous about, I think people have tried, either they have attempted or tried or are thinking about trying to send something through a black hole just to see, well, I don't know how anyone could see it. If you go into a black hole, I don't know if you ever come out of it. That's what they want to try and see. Now, I don't study them enough on my end. I'm fascinated with what I hear about them, but I don't necessarily know the end result yet of what these black holes are going to ultimately do. And yes, I did hear that some of them are merging out there and creating just yet a bigger, which makes me nervous, but you know, what do you do? That leads me to another question to you. Has anyone now just recently, and I'm talking within the last probably month or two, I've noticed a tremendous change, and many people can relate to this. And this is going to bring us into a very interesting subject in just a few minutes. But what do you know, or have you heard, or have you had any discussions about this magnetic shift that the Earth has just gone through? Because I can tell you, I could almost tell something was weird or wacky going on my end when something was happening and I had just heard we're going into a magnetic shift. What do you know about that? Do you know, have you heard anything about that?
Well, that was some controversial stuff that was going on. There was earlier in the year some talk that, you know, the pole actually reversed, which was when I first heard it. I'm like, I don't know about that, because everything we've heard about the poles flipping or reversal would throw so much into disarray. I mean, even more so than it already is here. So I'm not sure if that was actually the case, or if it was, you know, sensationalism, or if they were just trying to get clicks. It doesn't sound like there's been a reversal, or that it's moving backwards, I think was another claim out there. But I think that the magnetic field actually affects quite a lot. We had a story in our news recently dealing with a planet. There's apparently been a planet, I'll get you the information here, but there's been a planet that has been discovered that they're saying appears to have a magnetic field kind of like Earth. It actually is known as YZ SETI B. I don't come up with the names, but yeah. It's YZ SETI B. It's a repeating radio signal that has been found coming from a star about 12 light years away, orbited by this rocky planet. And what they're saying is that this planet could have magnetic fields, which means A, that it is more likely to be habitable. And if there were extraterrestrial life that should happen to exist on that planet, of course, it would need to have a magnetic field in order to be protected.
Interesting. Yeah, you bring up also a good subject with these ETs right now, too. What do you know, or what have you had, if you've had discussions with anyone regarding extraterrestrials, actually not necessarily in the sky, but also under the water, under the oceans, under things? Have you had any discussions with your guests about that?
Yeah, I talk to extraterrestrials all the time.
Oh, you do?
No, I don't.
I was just going to say, all right, now we've got another subject that I have to enter in here. I wasn't ready for that one. No, but have you heard of anything regarding that? Because I have seen, there has been some activity, from what I understand, where I live up north in some of these marshes that we have bodies of water and stuff, a lot of it up here. There's has been some encounters, but some situations where some of that has actually been happening. What do you know about that, or haven't you been following that very, very closely?
What's the question? Do I know people who have had these encounters, or have I talked to people who've had these encounters?
Yeah. Do you think there's any truth to the fact that extraterrestrial life lives under the water?
Yes, actually I do, because I've done a lot of research on what are known as USOs. Have you heard of that term?
USO? A little bit, yeah.
Unidentified submersible object, which is an object that would live underwater. There's a particularly an area off the California coast in the Catalina Channel which is known to have a lot of activity where people report these objects going in and out of the water. And of course, there's talks of bases. This could be one of theirs. There's another reported base that is near Dulce or Dulce, depending on how you say it, in New Mexico. And of course, there have been others that have been talked about over the years. So do I believe that UFOs can go in and out of the water? Yes, because people have reported them. Is there a base underwater? I don't know. I would think with as much sonar and as much radar capability as we have these days, we would be able to find evidence of that. I mean, we're finding shipwrecks and all sorts of things underwater, but no signs of bases, which could bring up the fact that many believe to be a fact, or the theory that these objects are just using the water to navigate, you know, as basically an entrance to a portal. So they go down underwater and then they disappear. And maybe it's just an opening.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I do recall, although you can't believe everything you see on TV, now that you mention it, I believe if I heard or had seen this correctly, there is a base somewhere, and I think it's on the California side, that actually our whoever, our Navy or whoever, they're actually studying it. Don't quote me on it. Don't hold it to be the truth of anything or fact. Again, I'm only yeah, reporting what I think I remember hearing, and that they did identify one, and that they're actually watching these crafts go down, and then they watch whatever's happening down there, and then they go up. That's the most that I have heard about it.
And perhaps you're talking about the one off of Malibu, which is, yeah, something that has been investigated, I would say, for, you know, at least 10 years or so, probably back further than that. I don't know where that is in relationship to Catalina Island, but Catalina Island is another one of those areas where there's talk of being some sort of base underwater.
Interesting. Yep. And you never know. Probably the one thing that creeped me out the most, and I saw this about, oh, I'd say 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago on TV, and it just bothers me ever since, is they had shown, even on, I can't remember where I saw it, I know I saw it on TV, these mermaids. Now, you know how everybody has their vision or their thinking of
now
these
now you're
mermaids.
Talking fantasy.
Well, I'm talking fantasy, but I'm talking creepy too. What they had, and I did see it, although unless this was made only for TV, keep in mind, we don't know what always happens behind the scenes in television, but just there's something to do with, yeah, they have mermaids. They don't look very pretty though. They're pretty ungodly, ugly, and scary, and very, whatever you want, skeletal, ick. And so
what, mermaids are extraterrestrials?
No, that's a good point. Are they? I mean, that I don't know, but that's a good question. And somebody out there might know that answer, but I think that's a good question, which leads me to another question maybe for you, because everyone is always curious. Jeremy, have you ever seen or been involved in some way with anything extraterrestrial or a UFO or anything like that?
I believe maybe one time there was this entity that I saw out of the corner of my eye, which is something that people report many times when they have these experiences, is they don't necessarily see them full face on. And in fact, in my case, as I turned to look at this thing, I no longer saw it.
Okay.
But it was there while I was looking out of the corner of my eye. So it could have been some sort of optical illusion. Yeah, it could have been. But what had led up to this experience was I had a group of individuals on who claim that they are in contact with a race of extraterrestrials who, kind of like what we talked about earlier, live underground, but this is on land. Mm-hmm. And these individuals supposedly have communications with these group of extraterrestrials. and can even facilitate contact. And so here's naive me in the early days of doing this program, thinking it would be cool to kind of wish one of these experiences on myself, which I no longer think is a cool thing to do. But back then, whatever. And I don't think that I really had contact. But what I do think happened is they were just letting me know that, hey, you know, we're here and we can appear when we want to, not when you want us to. And so I saw this thing. It was down a darkened hallway. And when I went down the hallway, and like I said, faced it straight on, I no longer saw it, but this thing would have been behind a coat rack, kind of peering out, two little eyeballs. Mm-hmm. How does that strike you?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I've seen things like that, only in bushes, though. But one would argue that would probably be some kind of an animal, and because it was dark, its lights, you know, its eyes got, you know, you could see them illuminate a little bit. But so you saw something peer behind a coat rack with what to height?
I would have been, you know, so the coat rack's what, probably 6-7 feet off the ground, and this thing was a little bit more than halfway up, so probably, you know, 4 or 5 feet. I mean, I was taller than it.
Okay. And then, so you see this thing peering. What exactly did you see? Just the eyes?
Just the eyes and kind of a shape, but again, hidden behind, you know, coats and hoodies and whatever on a coat rack. So it was really the eyes that got me.
Color of eyes?
Really no color, almost like when you see a raccoon or a cat at night. It's just kind of illuminated. Mm-hmm. So the same color or no color, like dark eyes, but just kind of a glassy mm-hmm. look.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. And so movement, disappearing, once you focused on it, did it just suddenly dissolve and disappear, or what happened then?
Well, like I said, I saw it out of the corner of my eye, and then as I kind of turned and faced it, obviously that changed the angle, and then I'm now walking towards it. I don't know if that's a good idea or not, but I mean, I didn't feel like it missed it away or anything like people say, or it like blinked. It just, over time, as I got closer to it, it was no longer there, and I grab the thing and I, you know, I pull it towards me, and I'm starting taking stuff off and throwing them on the floor. Mm-hmm. Nothing there.
Interesting. Well, that we put on the shelf for, it's hard to say what you encountered. Was it did you say the body of it was really black, like a shadow person?
I couldn't make that out because it was concealed. Mostly what I saw was the eyes.
Yeah, it was behind the clothes. Well, you're very gutsy for at least approaching it and at least trying to investigate. I would hate it to have pulled the stuff back and then all of a sudden something was there, and especially if it was creepy, and then it decided to dissolve in front of you. Interesting. So, all right. So I'm curious what this group that claims to have contact with the extraterrestrial or a group of extraterrestrials or whatever, what have they reported to you regarding the types of experiences that they've either had or the messages that they've been receiving from this group that they claim to have contact with?
Well, I'll tell you exactly who they are and what the website is. I just want to make sure that the website is still up. It's officialfirstcontact.com.
Okay.
And they are the crew that lives apparently beneath the Sandia Mountains.
Yeah.
And the Sandia Mountains are located in New Mexico. You know, we talked about that earlier, in possibility of a base in Dulce. But these are individuals who apparently are communicating with the group of ETs known as the Ponti, P'NTI. Who are said to reside below the mountain. They are from apparently the planet Pontiel. So the Ponti from the planet Pontiel, P'NTL is how you spell the planet apparently. And these individuals claim that they translate for these group of ETs, and they do it on Twitter for everyone to see. The Twitter handle is at Sandia Wisdom.
Interesting. And they translate for them. Did they ever say what kind of messages they're translating to you to give us an idea?
I don't recall exactly. We were focused in on their close encounters that they have had of the fifth kind, apparently, and also to reveal the steps to have an encounter, which is kind of what I went through, where we went through the steps together in order to summon an encounter.
Yeah.
But they do talk about that on their website, and they're constantly putting out, I think they have a couple of spokespeople now. There's Commander Tilcom, there's Grayson. Apparently there's a whole variety of these beings that they have identified through these communications, and they're constantly just putting out translations and commentary on a wide variety of subjects. They've been really active, talking about, the disclosure efforts as those have come and gone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I met someone at the Ghost Oregon Ghost Conference who apparently receives downloads periodically, and not by when it decides it wants to happen. And she described her moments of receiving these downloads from something extraterrestrial or of the CE5 nature or whatever, where she will literally sit at a typewriter and, as they would say, burn it up, which means can't stop typing so fast.
Automatic writing.
Yes, and just keeps going and going. And what's happening with her is that she has no control over what she's writing. She's just writing and writing and writing and writing. And I asked her the question, I said, "So what did you get out of all of that, other than the fact that they're telling you all this stuff?" She says, I don't know, messages, different things, thoughts that are going on, forewarnings of the world, all kinds of different things were coming to her. But then it's not just that, it's how you take that information and how you deliver it, use it, because there's a lot of people out there that are very skeptical about any of this in general, and some people out there that will literally buy into this, like that program called, what was it, War of the Worlds, a long time ago, where they really believed that we are under attack or something was happening, and it caused absolute mass hysteria and chaos. And so what do you make of all of this? I mean, you're a radio personality and you're delivering important messages to people. How do you filter or go about thinking about the delivering of messages that you get from some of your guests as you talk with them about their experiences?
Well, number one is not to censor the message. I mean, we can choose whether or not we want to believe it or not, but these are people's individual experiences, and their perceptions as well. So I don't really feel it's my place to bring somebody on and say, "Oh, I think you're crazy," or "I don't think that happened to you," or "Oh, by the way, here's what it probably was. You should really, think about it this way," or "You have a mental illness," or anything of the kind. I mean, that's just not my place. I don't think it's anybody's place. But do I believe every story? Absolutely not. Do you get the sense when you're talking to people that maybe they're pulling your leg? Yeah, I'm sure you've got those gut reactions as well before, as have I. I've even gone to the lengths, actually very few times. I think there was one time in 500 and, almost 600 episodes now that we've done, where I got to the end of the interview and I told the person, "Look, I don't think you're telling me the truth, and I don't think that it happened this way." And why did I say that? When I said it's not my place to judge, it's not my place to tell somebody what they experienced or what they did not experience. But it was through my questioning. Basically, like you had asked me about my experience. And if I had not been able to answer questions and said, well, you know, I don't really know, or no, I didn't get that. Or when you're having communications, you don't ask some of the most basic questions. Like I mentioned in the case of the group who contacts the extraterrestrials, they actually have asked the questions, who are you? Where are you from? But yet in other cases, there have been individuals who they just don't ask those questions. And I'm like, wait, if you were talking with somebody who was from, you know, a higher existence, wouldn't you want to know who you're dealing with? Wouldn't you ask them any tangible questions, or would you just like hang out? And yeah. So there was one interview where I just had to tell the person, look, I'm not going to vouch for you, yeah. Which I don't really vouch for anyone anyway. I don't tell the audience after the interview, oh, that person's legit, or you should go buy that person's book or anything like that. I mean, basically, you know, we present a premise. I try to back it up with things that are happening of late. And then bringing the guest on and discuss with them about their experiences and about their theories. And then at the end of the day, leave it for the audience to decide. So, no, not every story should be taken at face value, but we also should not discount the experience. Or a lot of people are traumatized by the experiences, and it takes some really getting used to and working through some of those traumas sometimes to be able to open up about these experiences. But when somebody is just not able to answer very, very basic questions about their experience, you begin to wonder.
Yeah. And, you know, I have a law background. And one of the things that I was trained in was the famous word consistency. And the reason why I say that is that first of all, I agree with you. People that are traumatized by their experiences, and I have been personally traumatized by a number of the experiences I have had in my life dealing with paranormal or whatever it could have been. One of the things that I always knew is that if I didn't remain consistent with my story, that chances are likely, and I started changing the dialogue or the narrative after a while, people were going to probably start losing faith in the fact that the stories that I tell might be a little bit out there. And this is the interesting thing. Not everybody has the same story to tell regarding the same situation. As an example, when I was in this haunted bed and breakfast, 900-year-old property in I think it was Wales or Scotland. I mean, I can't remember. I travel so much and I put this stuff out of my mind. But anyway, when I was in that really haunted room and that mirror started cycling, people thought, oh, the very first thing people thought was, they're just doing that like a carnival trick. They somehow rigged it up and it was swirling around and it was meant to scare you because they wanted you to believe you're in a haunted room. No, I was in a haunted room. How could I tell? I just knew because I'm an empath and I've got a lot of abilities that I cannot explain. However, when you tell somebody that story over and over again, of course, I have to relive that terror. I have to relive that the drama that went on even within myself of what I experienced. And to relive that over and over again can be painful. Have you ever talked with anyone on your show that has gone through a past life regression, especially when it involved possibly being abducted by something craft or alien or extraterrestrial?
A past life regression in relationship, or do you just mean like hypnosis?
Well, there is. That's a good point.
Because I don't know necessarily the tie-in with an abduction experience versus past lives. I think those might or might not be related. Who knows? I haven't come across that, but I've talked to plenty of people who've gone through hypnosis or something of the kind after they've had an experience. And piggybacking on what you were just saying about the trauma and that some people face in these experiences, there's one particular interview that I had that was a little uncomfortable for me. And the reason that it was uncomfortable is because I knew that this lady was reliving the event. She was living, reliving the trauma as we were on the air. And it's not that she wasn't prepared to answer the question. She had to gather herself together because she was, you'd ask the question and there'd be this big long pause. And this was before the days of doing video.
Yeah.
And so just kind of listening and, you know, I mean, as you know, dead air is not the best thing to have in this form of media. Mm-hmm. But there was no way that I could butt in and say, are you okay? Are you going to answer the question? Do we need to take a break? This was raw emotion that was playing out live on the air from an individual who's clearly traumatized by the experience, was reliving it, and had a very, very hard time retelling that.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't get any easier the second time. We gave her a couple of years to kind of compose herself and to come back on the program. And that was a little less traumatizing, it felt. And we got a little bit more information out of her the second time. But she had recently gone through a regression.
Mm-hmm.
Hypnosis, and had, through that experience, revealed to her what kinds of beings she had encounters with. And those happened to be the reptilian beings, which are probably some of the most shocking beings one could find. For instance, some encounter grays, which, you know, look weird. Others encounter hybrids or hybrids, human-like mm-hmm. entities. And these could be future humans from our future, or aliens disguised as humans. But the reptilians and the praying mantis ones, I think you might agree, are some of the creepiest.
Well, I had the praying mantis in my dream, and I had asked, remember when we were chatting a little bit about, be careful what you, as I said, it's my theme of my show, be careful what you wish for, because ever since I, you know, started this out years ago, wanting to see a ghost, it's evolved to things I can't even begin to explain. But I had, with the handprint that showed up on my body, and people always hear on my shows about this handprint and how many people I've gone to try to get their theory or their interpretation of whose handprint it was. It was not mine, because I would have had to have it upside down, laying like this. It was in a very weird position. But the bottom line with that is, I asked the universe. I said, would somebody please tell me who put that handprint on my body? And then I had the insectoid dream.
It could have been a what?
Yeah, what? Yeah. Yes, what? And it was a praying mantis that showed up in my dream. Or yeah, so it was a mantis being with a black COVID mask over its face. And at first it was walking away from me. Yeah. Well, but then I did have a gentleman on, though, who did kind of analyze that a little bit, and he made a little sense, and I need to explain that a little bit. I had 8 months of COVID where I nearly died twice, and I passed out.
Yes,
I was very sick. They didn't have any room for me in the hospital. They sent me home to die. And so, and may that sound shocking to some of you, well, you know what it was like back when COVID first started. But anyway, the COVID pneumonia over here where my hand is, this is where I had a blockage. And I had to use what is called a spirometer to suck the stuff out, because no antibiotic could take it out. On the other side, I had concrete COVID or pneumonia. So we were treating this and trying to suck this out. This is where the handprint showed up on my body. And then I had.
Do you believe you were healed?
Well, now you're onto something. That's correct. So I don't know. This was months later, keep in mind, when I finally said, somebody, please tell me, who put that there? I really want to know. Then I had the mantis dream. And what had happened in the dream is, at first it looked like a human person walking away from me, showing its backside, and then it stopped and creepily turned around. And then as it was turning around, it did have the big black mantis eyes, and it had a black COVID mask over its face. And how I had this described to me was this. COVID mask, they said, possibly an indicator here, showed up right over where the blockage was, possibly also a healing. And then it all kind of, I thought, you know, out of all of the interpretations I had, that one I'm buying into a little bit more. It's a mantis being is supposed to be technically a healer. And so I have been fine ever since. I've been in the gym, I'm losing weight, I'm feeling good again and all this sort of thing. But the only thing is it scared me so badly. I woke up in a flushing sweat, drenched. Mm-hmm. And of course I screamed out, don't ever do that to me again. And then I apologized. I know it sounds crazy, but I did. If it was really there to indicate that that's what happened is trying to heal me, that's the theory I'm closest to buying into right now. So anyway, back to you, because this is your show, not mine. But the thing is I just wanted to explain that to you because we don't know. I mean, technically, I'm still trying to figure it out, but I'm getting closer to maybe it. I just know it wasn't my hand. That's the only thing I know. And that's the only thing I have to go on. So let's shift this right back to you now. So we're going to move this away from the UFO subject for a moment, because in the area that you live in, especially up the coast like that and going up north, there seems to be a big, there seems to be a lot of discussion right now about Bigfoot. And what kinds of things have you learned about Bigfoot or in your area or anything like that? What can you share?
Well, I do know that here in my backyard, these are where many of the Bigfoot sightings happen, particularly up in Washington. I'm in Oregon, but Washington's a stone's throw away, and Washington has, its history of Bigfoot sightings. We know that the Bluff Creek, California area also is a big area. Was a big area. That's where the Patterson-Gimlin film was filmed, where Jerry Crew and his construction workers were starting to pick up this activity. Pennsylvania has also been a hot spot. For instance, Stan Gordon, who researches the UFO Bigfoot phenomenon, whether there is a connection there, has found that many times, there are Bigfoot seen near UFOs or UFOs seen near Bigfoot. As to what they are, I think we would have to talk about the bigger picture here, which is, yes, they could be a flesh and blood animal. That's a very good possibility. They also could be a kind of a magical creature. When you tell that to researchers who, you know, were hunters and whatever and saw these and now have become researchers or elders, Native American people who have seen these things for decades, they're a little bit taken back. But what they're not understanding is we're not saying that these are not flesh and blood animals. At least I'm not. I'm keeping my mind open to that fact, but that they could exist in another dimension. Same thing with the extraterrestrials. Same thing with ghosts. Why are we not all having these experiences? If they were all around us, wouldn't everybody in the same home be having these experiences? Wouldn't everybody who goes through the forest have these experiences? We're not, which says that either certain individuals are picked as special ones to have these experiences, which could be possible when we're talking about abduction. Certainly there has been talk that it's individuals with certain DNA that they're after, certain blood types that they're after, but it could just be happenstance. And what I mean by that kind of goes back to what we talked about with the UFOs going underwater. Could be an opening to a portal. Same thing with Bigfoot and with aliens and with ghosts, is that the reason not everybody has these experiences is we haven't found the opening. And who knows where the opening is? I mean, when we've heard reports of missing people in the forest, you know, where they're here one moment, gone the next.
Right.
It's as if they found the opening to the portal. And now they're in another dimension.
Right.
And that's why they can't be seen. We've all seen the show Stranger Things. Hopefully we have. It's referred to as the Upside Down. And in that show, they were so close, yet they were so far away because it's in another dimension, and unless you know where the doorway is, you're not going to have that experience. Does that mean you have to be in that other dimension? No, it's perhaps possible that these creatures also know how to navigate that opening or that portal, that doorway. And if they then enter into our reality when they disappear, well, it makes sense where they're going. They're going through the doorway back into the other dimension, which means we no longer see them, at least those of us who don't see in those other dimensions.
Yeah, I've talked with one guest on my show who actually knows somebody who walked through one of those portals. Where was it? Forests up in the northwest up there. And he had asked, and then the guy came out 14 days later, and he had asked his friend, well, what did you see? And he said, I don't recall what I saw. He said, all I knew is that I felt bewildered, delirious, confused, not knowing where I was walking to. And somehow he managed to walk out of it back into kind of the area where he was, where he, you know, was either found or he managed to make his way home. But he was literally gone for like 14 days. And mm-hmm. So, yeah, but that's a very rare situation where somebody walks in and then comes back out.
Yeah. So how does one survive 14
right.
days
right.
Without food and water? How do babies get from one location to many, many miles away? They couldn't have crawled that way. So does time slow down when they enter this this other dimension? Maybe they don't need the same resources that we need here, or maybe it is just pumped into them. You mentioned somebody who had the experience where they entered and then they came out. Mm-hmm. I have an instance where one person was 1 foot in and 1 foot out. They were walking down the trail. They took a step and they couldn't see the bottom. They couldn't see their leg anymore.
Oh, God.
Their leg disappeared. And then they pulled it back out and they turned quickly and ran the other direction.
Yeah.
And that's a classic case of somebody finding one of these openings. But luckily enough, they didn't get their full body in before they were able to pull themselves out.
Did you hear this story? I think it was last year sometime. I'm just kind of remembering this now. Montana, I think, a 3-4-year-old redhead boy was playing out in his yard. And there was a Bigfoot that actually, I believe, approached and took the kid. And I don't know, obviously took the kid with him or it, whatever you want to refer to it as, and was gone. Oh my God, what was it? 3-4 days or whatever. And then the kid couldn't really, put his speech together very well and explain what, but he showed back up. Obviously they found him, or he was returned or something like that. And of course he was dirty and all this stuff. And they were saying, where they're trying to get out of him. Where did you go? He explained that this big hairy teddy bear was taking care of him and actually was. I don't know what they fed him, but he did indicate that he did give him some food of some sort. And then, of course, he was returned. But, you know, when the kid is so young like that and they can't form their judgment, their speech or anything very well at that age, it's interesting. But that was a case that ended up in the paper.
So then the question that has to be answered is how did that boy, 3 years old, survive, without food, without water?
No, apparently he was given some type of food and something, but he was also in, I don't want to say he was in a cave. That might be completely wrong. But he was with this teddy bear that kept him warm because it was really cold nights. And, how did the kid survive hypothermia? In some of these situations, well, he said that the big teddy bear took care of him, probably surrounded it, gave him warmth. And, you know, it's baffling because then the kid was returned. But, you know, and I don't know, just very interesting. You, like you say, magical. I can tell you this, where I live, one of the things that they have discovered, some of the researchers here have discovered up north in some of our marshes, have been a connection with blue orbs, the marshes, blue orbs, and the connection also with the Bigfoot being. And mm-hmm. So when you mentioned before, is there a connection between UFOs and Bigfoot? I've heard of both of them always kind of going together in some really weird aspect at times. I heard of a case where there was a man who was walking, saw Bigfoot. The Bigfoot felt trapped in a small, in an area where there was a pond or a stream, and it felt kind of trapped. And so there was some kind of a UFO that went and picked it up for some reason and took it out of there and brought it to another area. And this apparently is factual, but I can't give you all kinds of sources for it right now. I'm just doing this from memory. But just really bizarre situations. I don't know.
Almost like a divine intervention.
In that case, it was, because it felt trapped and it was doing the yell, kind of like a yell, like, you know, I'm trapped, there's humans here. Although it's interesting because a Bigfoot never seems to be that afraid. I take that back. Maybe they are, maybe they are not. I did interview a lady who did come face to face with the Bigfoot. It was probably about 7 feet tall. And what happened with her, very simply, was she was traveling and trying to follow this UFO that she saw in the air. It led her to a remote area with a bunch of trees. She went down this path. She got a flat tire and she got stuck. And so she got out and she had 10% left on her cell phone, don't we all? And so she went to try to go to a cell phone tower. And as she was walking through the woods, she got tired. So she laid down to take a quick nap. And then what happened with her was that it was also cougar land country. And so she always learned that if there was some cougar or something, she ran into one to make herself very tall and very, you know, very tall and all that and scared away or try to keep it away from attacking her. She woke up when she smelled something or smelled and heard something sniffing at her. And she thought, oh my God, this is a cougar. It's going to kill me. Okay. Mm. So she jumps up. And she starts, you know, like that. And then right in front of her, literally 2 inches in front of her, a Bigfoot, probably about seven and a half feet tall, took one look at it and went, he or she looked down at her and went, and then just took off running into the woods. It was absolutely terrified. But to this day, you know, that was the only person that I really know who came 2 inches away from an actual Bigfoot. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I mean, who knows if they're scared of us or if they feel that they are larger than us. I mean, yeah. There's been many cases of these creatures, you know, being elusive. And that could possibly be, you know, they don't want to be, you know, documented, but they could also be afraid of us. They could just be retreating, you know.
Right. Oh, yeah, right. You know, it's a very mysterious world out there. So I want one more subject here, and then we have to go into wrap up. But out of all of the people that you talked with on your show, is there one person or a couple in particular that gave you such a fascinating story about whatever they experienced, could be just about anything, where you just simply never really forgot about that? Anything, because you've had so many.
That's the thing is, yeah, that's the thing is, you know, the next show is always coming so quickly. Sometimes you don't have a chance to sit and ponder about, you know, what you've just done. I mean, there's been many trying to come up with one here off the top of my head here. Let's see here. I think it was probably the case that I was talking about earlier. And so I'll just give you some specifics here. This lady's name, because it was so traumatic for her, her name is Nancy Termaine, and she's written a couple of books. I'll give you the names of those as well, because you could really get more information from her than I could do justice here. But one of them is called Symbiosis, A Love Beyond Space and Time. The other book is called Preordained. She believes that she had encounters with reptilians and was very, very traumatized by this experience. This is not something that just happened to her once or twice. This is a life of experiences, mostly of the reptilians who she claims to have contact with. And but it was just so heartbreaking to just hear her tremble as she was trying to. I almost was like, well, I got to really ask, you know, softball questions, because the last thing that I want to do is trigger someone.
Right.
I want to have, you know, a good show and a great interview and get the information out there. But in her case, she was just so emotionally scarred from these experiences. It was really, really tough to try to get information out of her. I mean, usually we get a lot of information from guests, but in this case, it was just so traumatic for her to try to share the story that, you know, we really didn't get a lot out of her. But what we do know is that she's had a life of experiences with these reptilian beings, and it apparently still continues.
Yeah, one of the things that I've talked with guests on, too, is that sometimes they say if they retell their stories, they're afraid that these things are going to show up again. And then, you know, like they can never get rid of them, because as they keep giving them FaceTime, as you say, you know, that all of a sudden here they are all over again. I did hear of some reptilians. I don't know. The only state that I've heard that someone had an encounter in with a reptilian was and people don't get all excited here if we mention things about certain places and stuff like that. This stuff is very mysterious. Can happen anywhere. I mean, Jeremy lives so far from me, and I live in the middle of the United States, essentially, you know, upper, and it can happen anywhere, anytime, even all over the world. But I know she had an experience in Arizona. And I also, during the Oregon Ghost Conference, which is what I was talking to Jeremy earlier about, is that when I showed one of my slides, one of the guests actually screamed, and was very loud scream. And I thought, I'm not here to really you know, scare anybody, but it's just kind of like, this is the reality that some people have gone through, and it's kind of like, or perception, whichever you want to classify it as. So this woman that you're referring to, the one with the reptilians, did she ever say what state or where they keep showing up or how they look? Any details like that, Jeremy?
Not that I can recall. I mean, those interviews were many, many years ago, but it still sticks with me today how, you know, traumatized she was. I think she may have had, you know, encounters, though, in multiple locations, which usually is what happens to people. It's not something where, you know, they live in a haunted house, per se, and they just have experience with the ghosts there. Usually when they travel to another location, there usually is some form of this activity that follows them. And that could partially be because they're tied to the human, not to the location.
Yeah, no, I agree with you on that. I've heard of that happening with a number of individuals, and they feel like they can't ever escape it. So, well, this time has flown by. Excellent discussion tonight. People probably seen me the most riled that they've ever seen me ever before, but excellent discussion. Jeremy, tell people if they want to listen to your show, reach out to you or whatnot, what kind of information would you like to provide on that?
Sure. My website is paranormalradio.com, and it all goes from there. We've got links to our social media. We're basically downscaling our YouTube channel because it has officially not become worth it anymore. We now have two strikes. And so if we get our third, we're done. And that's hundreds of hours of time that we've spent all for naught. So the YouTube channel is going away, but our website, our podcasts, everything else is alive and kicking, going strong. We've been doing the show since 2015. Very popular program on the podcast app. So we encourage anybody who wants to follow us or subscribe to the free version of our podcasts. All of our shows are out there for free. We do make them available to subscribers for the first 7 days via an RSS feed. But after that, they show up on all of the major podcast apps, which we have linked up at parabnormalradio.com. That's P-A-R-A-B-N-O-R-M-A-L radio.com. Somewhere between abnormal and paranormal is where we are. And from that point, you can get links to all of our social media as well. We've got a got some official music as well that we have on the program. This is original stuff. And so if you're interested in picking up some of the original music that we have on our program as well, we've got a link right on our website.
Jeremy, thank you so much for being on the show today.
You're very kind. Thank you.